भगवते वासुदेवाया। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 18 टेक्स्ट 22 मत् प्राप्तये जिष्ठ सुरासुरादयास् तप्यन्त उग्रं तप इन्द्रियेद्यः ऋते भवत्पादपरायणां नमः। विन्दान्त्यहं त्वाद् हृदया युतोचिता। Okay. प्राप्तये जेष सुरासुरादयास् तप्यन्त उग्रं तपरनिन्द्रियधिया। Okay. To obtain my mercy, Aja, Lord Brahma, Isha, Lord Shiva, Sura, the other demigods, headed by King Indra, Chandra, and Varuna. Osura Adhaya, as well as the demons, Tapyante, undergo Ugram, severe Tapa, austerity, Ayindriyadhya, whose minds are absorbed in thoughts of superior sense gratification. Rite, unless Pavat Pada Parayanat, one who is wholly and solely engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Probably should have been in two parts. Na, not, mam, me, vindati, obtain, aham, I, twat, and you, hridaya, whose hearts, yata, therefore, ajita, O unconquerable one. Translation, Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Translation, O Supreme Unconquerable Lord, when they become absorbed in thoughts of material enjoyment, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as well as other demigods and demons, undergo severe penances and austerities to receive my benedictions. But I do not favor anyone, however great he may be, unless he is always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Because I always keep you within my heart, I cannot favor anyone but a devotee. Purport. In this verse, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, clearly states that she does not bestow her favor on any materialistic person. Although sometimes a materialist becomes very opulent in the eyes of another materialist, such opulence is bestowed upon him by the goddess of Durga Devi, the material expansion of the goddess of fortune, not by Lakshmi Devi herself. Those who desire material wealth worship Durga Devi with the following mantra, Tanam Dehi, Rupam Dehi, Rupapati Bhajam Dehi. Quote, O worshipable Mother Durga Devi, please give me wealth, strength, fame, a good wife, and so on. That's the end of the prayer. By pleasing Goddess Durga, one can obtain such benefits, but since they are temporary, they result only in Maya Sukha, illusory happiness. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Maya Sukhaya Param Udvarato Vimutan. Those who work very hard for material benefits are Vimutas, foolish rascals. Because such happiness will not endure. On the other hand, devotees like Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj achieved extraordinary material opulences, but such opulences were not Maya Sukha. When a devotee acquires unparalleled opulences, they are the direct gifts of the goddess of fortune who resides in the heart of Narayana. The material opulences a person obtains by offering prayers to the goddess Durga are temporary, as described in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, verse 23, Antavat Tupalam Tesham Tad Bhavatyalpamedasam. Man of meager intelligence desires temporary happiness. We have actually seen that one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to enjoy the property of his spiritual master, and the spiritual master, being merciful toward him, gave him the temporary property, but not the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. That special mercy of the power to preach is given to a devotee who does not want anything material from his spiritual master, but wants only to serve him. The story of the demon Ravana illustrates this point. Although Ravana tried to abduct the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, from the custody of Lord Ramchandra, he could not possibly do so. The Sita Devi he forcibly took with him was not the original Sita Devi, but an expansion of Maya, or Durga Devi. As a result, instead of winning the favor of the real goddess of fortune, Ravana and his whole family were vanquished by the power of Durga Devi, Srishti Siti Pralaya Sat and Ashakti Eka. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Lakshmi Devi is offering prayers here. From this verse, we can understand that the Lakshmi Devi being described here is the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. So she's the original spiritual form of Lakshmi Devi found in the spiritual world, the husband of Mahavishnu or Lord Narayana. And she's saying that mat praptaye means to obtain her mercy. Many persons perform very severe austerities. Tapyanta ugram tapa means very severe austerities are performed to obtain her mercy. And she gives a list of persons, Lord Brahma, Aja, Isha, Lord Shiva, the demigods, the demons. They're all prepared to perform very severe austerities to obtain her mercy. And for what reason do they want her mercy? Aindriye Diya, because they have some concept of sense gratification that is very dear to them. They consider it a superior form of sense gratification than they're already enjoying. So in order to obtain that, they seek the mercy of Mother Lakshmi. So they perform severe austerities to get that mercy. But she says here, unless they are completely dedicated to the Lord, Vite Bhavat Pada Parayanan, unless they're completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, they cannot get her mercy. So what do they get instead? That is what Prabhupada is describing in the purport. They perform severe austerities to get her mercy, but she's saying unless they are surrendered devotees, they do not get her mercy. So what do they get instead? They get the shadow form of her, not of her mercy, they get the shadow form of Lakshmi. namely Durga Devi, Prabhupada is mentioning here, who's an expansion of the original Lakshmi Devi, the shadow form of Lakshmi. They get her mercy. Well, I don't know if you can call it mercy as such, but they get her mercy or grace. And the result of such mercy is that they actually suffer. That's what they get instead. Instead of getting the original mercy of Lakshmi, they rather get the seed of their destruction. So the example is given of Ravana. Prabhupada's giving this example. In the purport, or in the pastime, Ravana wanted Lakshmi Devi so that he can enjoy. So in terms of the verse here, Aindriya Diya, a higher, superior idea of sense gratification, is Sita, as far as Ravana is concerned. That is a superior form of sense gratification. He wanted her for his own enjoyment. So he performed a very dangerous austerity of kidnapping her. It's dangerous because it's going to kill him, of course. It's the seed of his destruction. And did he get Sita Devi? No. Instead, he got the shadow form, a chaya form of Sita. Instead, and so he thought he had grabbed something substantial, but what he had grabbed was not Sita, but rather the seed of his destruction. And then later on, Sita, that shadow form of Sita, he could not also enjoy, and it ended up being the destruction of his whole kingdom. And Ramchandra came to get her back. So this is the idea here, that someone has a superior idea of sense gratification that they want to achieve, and they approach Mother Lakshmi to get that. But rather, they get something else. They get the seed of their destruction. So Prabhupada's putting this verse from the purport, Maya Sukaya Paramu Dharatovi Mudan. In order to actually get the goddess of fortune, one needs to be on the spiritual platform, which is only obtainable by surrendering to Krishna, Bhava Padaparayana. No one can get the descent of the Lord Swarup Shakti, her mercy, without being surrendered to God. So whatever they get is just a material shadow, a substanceless resemblance of the real thing. And because it's insubstantial, it is ultimately dissatisfying. Lord Chaitanya, when he was traveling through South India, he met one Brahmin who was a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And this, he would be so absorbed in meditation on Lord Ramchandra that one time Lord Chaitanya went to his house for taking prasadam. And the Brahmana hadn't brought the prasadam in time. So Lord Chaitanya was like waiting. So he finally went to this Brahmana and said, you know, what's going on with the lunch? You know, prasadam's coming. He said, first I have to wait for Lakshman to come back from the forest with all the preparations. And then at that time I can make the lunch and serve it out to you. So it is described that Lord Chaitanya was very pleased by this Brahmana seeing his level of absorption in the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra as a Ram Bhakta. So later on, being lost in the, you could say, delirium of sorts of deep meditation on the Lord, this Brahmana goes into great anxiety when he comes to the point of his meditation where Lord Ramchandra has kidnapped Sita. And he becomes very distraught and very depressed, and he can't focus, he can't make the lunch for Lord Chaitanya and so on. So Lord Chaitanya has to assure him that Ravana has not actually taken the real Sita, but rather he's taken a shadow form of Sita. And then he quotes a verse there that I used to like a lot. Apakrite vastu nahe pakrite gochar vede puranete e kahe nirantar. He says, apakrita vastu, spiritual substance, is always beyond the jurisdiction of matter. Apakrita gochar. Spiritual substance, like Sita in context, is always beyond the jurisdiction of matter. So Ravana is a personification of materialism. And so he wants something that is spiritual, but that which is spiritual is always beyond the jurisdiction of that which is material. It cannot be obtained. Just like this verse we hear about the holy name of Krishna. How does it start? The famous one, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Atashri Krishna Namadi, Amavek Grahyam Indriyai. What is it meaning? Yeah, it's a transcendental name, qualities, pastimes, etc. of Krishna are always, they cannot be captured or vibrated by the material tongue. Only those who are endowed with a sevam mukh and a great service enthusiasm can beginning with chanting the name of Krishna's son, can actually hope to obtain the spiritual thing. So Krishna's adokshaja, beyond sense perception, so also are his spiritual energies. So they cannot be captured or obtained by those who are materialistic persons. So Ravana is the personified materialism. And he thought he had captured Sita, but he didn't capture her because she's completely spiritual. She's beyond his jurisdiction. So rather what he got was a shadow form. And that shadow form became the seed of his downfall. Maya sukaya param udarato vimudam. Prabhupada's quoting this verse in the purport. The verse says, Maya sukaya param. That Maya sukha, the happiness granted to one by the material energy, param, is a great burden. The happiness is a great burden because what is the burden of the happiness of Maya? The happiness given by Maya, of course, is a little bit of a misnomer because it leaves a great burden. And what is the great burden that it leaves? You can kind of contemplate it. What is the burden that the happiness of Maya leaves? It leaves the burden. Okay, Hankering, that's true. It leaves a burden of suffering, actually. This is interesting. The happiness given by Maya forces you to carry the burden of suffering. The seed of happiness given by Maya bears bitter fruits, in other words. What is this, and why is it that it causes suffering? Prabhupada says here in the purport, because whatever she gives to a person does not long endure. It disappears in due course of time, causing suffering to the individual. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukho yonai evite. The happiness derived from the senses contacting the objects of the senses gives birth to misery. That's actually what's taking place. Because someone may say that, no, I like the things given by Maya. I like my wife. I like my car. I like my house. I like my bank balance. And someone may say, and oftentimes they would argue in this way, that my life is good. I like all these things. So then the question we have to ask them is, well, how much do you like them? And they say, well, I like them a whole lot. I really, really like them. That means to the degree you like it, to that degree you suffer more. Because when they are forced to be taken away from you by the time factor, the degree you are attached to those things is the degree in which you will suffer from the loss of those things. So that way the things that we're attached to in the material world become the seeds or the sources of our misery. The more we're attached to them, the more powerful they are sources of misery. In this way, Maya Sukaya Bharam, one who is after the happiness of the illusory energy, carries the burden of unhappiness that later on results when they disappear from their vision or from their possession. So in this way, going after obtaining the shadow form of Sita or praying to Lakshmi to gain her favor, but getting only a shadow form of her, carries only the seed of one's own unhappiness. Maya sukaya param udarato vimudan. And therefore Prahlad Maharaj says such persons are greatly foolish. By cultivating a life of attachment to material things which do not long endure, one is greatly foolish because such things become the sources of their great misery. And it is easily seen in terms of like a breakup. This is the most classic example, but probably the most effective one in the material world. A boy meets girl meets boy, and there is a breakup. And they write songs about these things. These songs go platinum, or gold. Gold platinum. Do you know gold platinum? This is like how you say, huh? It's a show how popular the songs are. The more popular, if it's pretty popular, you get gold. If it's more popular, it gets platinum. And a lot of the songs that get these like high attention from these superstars are the songs that talk about breakup. The songs that talk about how much they fell in love and all these things, they might make it up to the gold standard. But the songs about breakup, people relate to a lot more, and so they get more views, as it were, platinum. So in this way, in the material world, they're proving that the things which they think are the source of their happiness are actually the source of their misery. Because they do not long endure, they're not eternal. So contrasting those who worship Lakshmi for material things and get only the shadow of her, are those who are actually surrendered to the Supreme Lord, Bhavapada Parayana. They're surrendered to the Supreme Lord, so what do they get instead? They actually don't pray directly for the fortunes given by Lakshmi Devi. They simply worship the Supreme Lord. And what do they get instead? They get all the opulences of the Swarup Shakti. So the wealth given to devotees is coming by the original form of Lakshmi Devi. She is the one who blesses them with good fortune. Just like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna refers to Krishna in the first chapter as Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And it's actually meant to be like a subtle like slandering of Krishna. Because he's saying, oh Madhava, you know, why are you engaging me in this unfortunate battle? You know, he's actually meaning it as a kind of a sarcasm, referring to Krishna as the goddess of fortune, but you're trying to engage me in this unfortunate event. But actually, he is the goddess of fortune, a husband of the goddess of fortune, Krishna, Madhava. And so when you get Krishna, you also get the mercy of the original goddess of fortune. So the opulences of a devotee, if they shall come to him, they are directly given by the spiritual form of the goddess of fortune. So those opulences are indestructible, as described in this way. The opulences given to materialists are due to the results of their karma or due to the mercy of Durga, or the material shadow form of Lakshmi. And those results are destructible, and therefore they're the seeds of our misery. But the opulences given by the goddess of fortune are indestructible, because they're coming from the spiritual platform. Although it looks like material opulences, the example is given of Prahlada and Dhruva in the purport. Although it looks like material opulences, they're directly granted by the original goddess of fortune. So those opulences are indestructible. And so it can be seen that a devotee also enjoys great opulences. One example would be, of course, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada came here with hardly anything. Well, not hardly anything, literally nothing, except a box of books and maybe some cereal or something like this. And later on, by trying to please the Supreme Lord, his spiritual master, as Prabhupada mentions here, he was empowered by the spiritual master and by Krishna to spread the movement all over the world. Now, to do that, it requires a lot of opulence to spread the movement as Prabhupada did it, effectively catching the attention of so many materialists requires an opulent display by which people will become attractive. And so Prabhupada was actually granted that. The temples, the so much of money also are. There's one interview where Prabhupada's being questioned about his book sales, and he says we're not making less than $40,000 per week. Pradumna, how much we are making? Yes, $40,000 a week. You know, and he's telling just very openly. That would normally be seen as like a sign of arrogance. You know, it's a very funny video because he goes, he's like, Pradumna, how much we are making? Yes, no less than $40,000 a week from our book sales. Great opulences Prabhupada was exhibiting. And those opulences were given directly by the spiritual form of Lakshmi Devi. So those opulences were indestructible. That's what's being described here. When one worships Lord Narayana or Lord Krishna directly, then automatically he gets the blessings of all his spiritual energies, including Mother Lakshmi, who's the original energy of Krishna. What is that verse? Namna Makari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti. Nija Sarva Shakti. By chanting one name of Krishna purely, really chanting Krishna's name and not just a semblance of the name, but one name of Krishna, contained within that one name, Nija Sarva Shaktis, all the Shaktis of Krishna, including Mother Lakshmi and other spiritual Shaktis are there. And therefore, one who chants purely is super empowered like anything. But who can chant purely the name of Krishna? Only one who is Bhavat Padaparayana, one who is completely sold out to Krishna, who's given wholesale his whole existence to Krishna, that person can chant purely, and therefore he can exhibit such opulences. Whereas those who are chanting the names of Krishna for achieving material benefits, then what they also get some of the Shaktis of Krishna, but they don't get Sarva Shakti, they don't get all the Shaktis. So one who chants Nam Aparad, it's described in this way, one who chants the Nam Aparad, then they can get the fruit of enjoyment, bhukti. One who chants the offended name of Krishna can get the fruit of material enjoyment. That means they get the material Shakti of Krishna, Durga Devi. They get her mercy, as it were. Those who chant the name of Krishna seeking liberation, they get another Shakti of the Lord. But those who chant the name of Krishna having given themselves whole soul to Krishna, not even seeking the benefits of his potencies, in that one name of Krishna, all the Shaktis are contained. And such a person can easily perfect his life. So that's what Prabhupada is mentioning here. In the second paragraph, he mentions how a person who, he mentions a history of a godbrother, it seems, who wanted to enjoy the property of his spiritual master. So he got that property, at least for some short time. But the result of wanting something material is that it does not long endure. And so within the seed of his enjoyment is the fruit of his suffering. Whereas Prabhupada says, for someone who does not desire anything from the Lord, then within that seed is the fruit of great opulence. What is the last verse of Bhagavad Gita? I don't remember the Sanskrit. Yeah, what is the English? Yes, what is the English? All opulences. Wherever there is a devotee of Krishna, Krishna, in that place is present all opulence, victory, morality, and there's another one, fourth one. Come on. Morality, victory, opulence, and fame. Fame, great fame. You got to freshen up in our Bhagavad Gita, huh? This is a very famous verse of Bhagavad Gita. We don't even know it. It's a little sad. So this is the result of actually giving oneself wholesale to Krishna. Great opulence just comes to someone without even wanting it. And of course, the greatest opulence that comes by getting the mercy of the Swarup Shakti of Krishna is prema. That is the greatest opulence. So it may be seen that someone who is wholesale giving himself to Krishna does not possess great opulences in terms of the material idea of what it is. They don't live in a big house and have great opulences. There are many. Lord Chaitanya's associates were very simple-minded individuals, householders, many of them. And they had very little. I often, last year, Bajranarayana Prabhu? Yeah, Bajranarayana Prabhu came and gave a presentation here about how ISKCON is expanding all over the world. So he showed pictures of just these huge projects that ISKCON is doing all over the planet, which was very inspiring, certainly on one level. It shows how ISKCON is doing great benefit for the world today. And it was showing the great opulence of ISKCON also in the presentation. And I said, I wish he would have showed the picture of someone that looked like Kulaveitra Sridhar. You know, Kulaveitra Sridhar had so many holes in his clothes that it was like the holes had holes. I mean, he was so poor. And his house had so many holes in it. It was probably useless. When it would rain, all the rain would come inside the house, you know. That's how poor he was. And he would worship Mother Ganga. He from his business, which was selling banana leaves. Now, in Bengal, there are banana trees everywhere. You know, anyone can just pull a banana tree, a leaf off the tree and use it. So he was making a business out of selling banana leaves. How could he get any customers? Why would they go to him when they can just go to a tree and get it themselves? But yet he is making such a business, and he was making something like 10 paisa a day. We don't even know what that means. You know, that's how little it was. 10 paisa a day is probably less than one penny. And he was giving 50% of that to the worship of Mother Ganga. So he was such a poor Vaishnava. In terms of externally speaking, he didn't seem to exhibit great opulence. But he had one powerful opulence gifted to him by the Swarup Shakti of Krishna, which is her main treasure. And that is the treasure of prema. So due to the influence of his prema, he would stay up the whole night screaming the names of Krishna. You know, Krishna, Krishna. The whole night he would be doing that in the ecstasy of prema. And all his neighbors would be getting greatly disturbed. They would say, due to his great hunger, he is screaming throughout the whole night. We need to go, you know, either go feed him or get him out of here because he's keeping us whole night because of his hunger pains. They were thinking that way because they could not recognize the real opulence of real opulence being his pure attraction to Krishna, which is the real gift of the Swarup Shakti. In fact, when the Swarup Shakti of Krishna bestows material opulences, a devotee may think himself cheated. Iyengar Prabhu used to say many times, it would be funny that we're chanting the holy names of Krishna to get the mercy, to get the mercy of Krishna Swarup Shakti and the descent of Prema. And he says, so therefore, when someone from our kirtan outside, if someone gives us $5, we should think that Krishna is laughing at us. You know, I'm chanting your name to get Prema, but instead I got $5 instead. So I've been cheated by the Supreme Lord in this way. Devotees many times will have such devotional sentiments that even if they already get great material opulences, in their humility they say, what is this material opulence? I'm devoid of love of God. So what is the use of such opulences? So that means that the real gift of the Swarup Shakti is pure love of God. And therefore we should not take it as necessarily, we should not take material opulences as necessarily indicative of the Supreme Lord's mercy. You know, oftentimes when people consider Prabhupada's a pure devotee, they made that consideration on the strength of external considerations. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, you know, the big temples with so many books distributed and so on. And this is certainly true because it is also mentioned in the CC, Kali Kalera Dharma, Krishna Nama Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinanahe Parapavratan, that unless you're empowered by Krishna Shakti or Swarup Shakti, that you cannot spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So generally, people take these external features to be the only, or as the main criteria for someone being a pure devotee. So unless you're able to do something on the level of Prabhupada, then you're not a pure devotee. And this is a very neophyte understanding, because if that was the criteria, then Lord Chaitanya's followers are also neophytes then, because it's not saying that they were spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. In fact, Lord Chaitanya himself must not be that powerful, because he also didn't spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And also, all the avatars of Lord Vishnu must not be that powerful either, because they also didn't spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So if that was the only criteria alone, as indicative of a pure devotee, then they were practically devoid of a line of pure devotees. And obviously no one thinks in that way. So our understanding has to be mature. Material opulence in the form of great wealth, great victory, great fame, and opulence is not the only indication of empowerment by Krishna, but rather the subjective experience of pure love for Krishna is the truth that someone has got that. And because that it's subjective, you cannot easily perceive it. So it may not always be perceptible how someone has actually gotten the mercy of the Swarup Shakti of Krishna. We may not, oftentimes we may misconstrue, in fact, like in the case of Pradyumna, Pradyumna Mishra. Pradyumna Mishra went to see Ramananda Roy one time. He had the great taste for hearing Krishna Katha, great powerful taste for hearing Krishna Katha. So Lord Chaitanya advised him, you're going to hear Krishna Katha from Ramananda Roy. There is no one who is a greater Vaishnava, Rasik Vaishnava than Ramananda Roy. If you want to hear about Krishna, you're going to hear from Ramananda Roy. So Pradyumna Mishra went to go see Ramananda Roy, and Ramananda Roy had a servant. So the servant told him quite plainly, Ramananda Roy is not available right now. He's massaging the naked bodies of the Devi Dasis. He told him quite plainly, like it wasn't even that big of a deal. And so Pradyumna Mishra was like, what? Excuse me? Oh, wait, maybe I didn't hear that right. What did you say? You know, and he said he's right now he's busy. He's massaging. He's training the girls how to offer their sentiments to Krishna, and right now he's massaging their naked body. Now, obviously, if we were to see that today, we probably think that he doesn't have prema. Obviously. Or he has another type of prema. The material reflection of it and not the real thing. But he was a topmost Vaishnava. When Lord Chaitanya will be suffering the pangs of separation, the only person who could satisfy him was Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar. No one else could really placate his sentiments. Therefore, they always remained in Puri with Lord Chaitanya, such exalted Vaishnavas they were. And yet, it would have been easy, as it was for Pradyumna Mishra, who was also a pure devotee of the Lord, to misconstrue his sentiments as something material. So therefore, my concluding point is that the truth of having gotten the mercy of Krishna, the descent of his Swarup Shakti, here shown as Mother Lakshmi, is that one has a subjective experience of pure attraction to Krishna, prema. That's not always visible in terms of great material opulence, although in certain cases it is seen or shown as great material opulence. And therefore, we may not always be able to tell if others have gotten the mercy of Krishna, but we can understand when we're really getting the mercy of Krishna, when when we're experiencing greater levels of subjective achievement in terms of pure attraction to Krishna. If we're getting a lot of appreciation from devotees, that is not necessarily an indication of getting the mercy. You will know for yourself if you've got mercy. Sometimes people would ask the Prabhupada, how do I know I make an advancement? And Prabhupada said, you will know yourself. No one has to tell you. He would give the example, like, how do you know you have satisfied your hunger? Does anyone have to tell you? My dear Prabhu, that's enough. You know for yourself. You know directly for yourself. So similarly, one can know directly for himself if he's actually getting mercy of the Lord by the experience, the subjective experience of increasing taste for Krishna consciousness, the activities of Krishna consciousness, hearing, chanting, serving devotees, not finding fault with them. And so all these things will be direct evidence of having actually gaining greater and greater influence of the Swarup Shakti in your heart. And that is the real criteria that we have to look for. It is not an analysis of others and are they getting the mercy so much, or, oh, look how much preaching they're doing, they must be greatly empowered. That's not really what we should be looking for. Rather, we should be looking for the pure attraction for Krishna consciousness, at least within our own hearts. And as we start to recognize it for ourselves, within ourselves, we might be able to recognize it in others as well. And recognize, therefore, how they're actually gaining the mercy of the Lord. So that's my discussion. That's a little longer than I normally like to speak. Are there any questions? Yeah. Oh, okay. So. Very often. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The flu, yeah. Yes. That's a beautiful example. You guys get it, what he's saying? He's saying that the Krishna's flu is getting the benefit of the taste of Krishna's lips on a daily basis. And because he's descending from the bamboo trees, because the flute is made out of bamboo, huh? He's descending from the bamboo trees, so the bamboo trees feel proud to see the flute is getting the nectar of Krishna's lips on a daily basis. They feel that they're benefited in that way. So he's using that as an example to say how a Vaishnava feels great happiness when he sees another Vaishnava's prospering in devotional service. That's a very beautiful example. Because no food can satisfy the fire of prema that was burning his existence. Just like, this example is actually given to Briha Bhavachamrita. I was going to use that, but I didn't use it today. It's described that just as when you're suffering from the fire of hunger, and the fire of hunger is very strong in your body, then no type of opulence can satisfy you. When there's great hunger, the fire of hunger in your body, if someone offers you like a coat, you don't feel very pleased. Even if someone offers you diamond rings, if you're starving like anything, that's not satisfying to you. So similarly, because the devotees of Krishna are always burning up with the fire of prema, no material opulence has the power to actually attract their attention. And therefore, even if the Lord gives them great, great opulence, that is not sufficient. So such is the influence of pure love of God. Thank you for those examples. That was nice. Yeah, I see. There isn't a microphone. Yeah. Well, what else would it be? If it's not a test from Krishna, how else can we conceive of it? There's always several ways you can conceive of struggle in the material world. You can look at it as the result of my karma. And, you know, you can look at it as bad luck, providential arrangements, just bad luck. You can see it as Krishna's mercy. I mean, there's only so many ways you can conceive of suffering in the material world. Yeah, okay, so misery is this, it's his fault. I'm suffering because of this person and so on. That doesn't make you more Krishna conscious. So for devotees who want Krishna consciousness, they will conceive of life in a very specific way. Therefore, sometimes when the question is asked, well, how do I know if it's Krishna or if it's my karma? It's like, what difference does it make? As a devotee of the Lord, we always will conceive of it as Krishna's arrangement because that makes us Krishna conscious. So it doesn't really matter if it's my karma. Even if it is my karma, karma is ultimately coming from Krishna, the super soul who distributes the fruits of one's fruit of activity in this world. So ultimately it's Krishna anyway. And because we want to become Krishna conscious, we can just conceive of it as so then someone may say, well, how is that not just a mental adjustment? And the answer to that is, it is a mental adjustment when you're having transcended the stage of anarchana vritti. But it's useful because it helps you to control your mind. Because the mind is essential for our progress towards the goal of life, we do need things that will help us to keep our mind under control. In fact, in the 11th canto, chapter 26, the Avanti Brahmana, no, not chapter 26, the chapter where the Avanti Brahmana chapter, I forget which chapter it is, 23 or something. He makes a point that all the processes of yoga, charity, religion, piety, all these things are simply meant to keep the mind under control, you know, because the mind is so crucial for our further progress. So before we've transcended the stage of anarchana vritti, then to conceive of things in that way is somewhat of a mental adjustment, but it's useful. So what's the problem in that? It's useful. Well, we know from the strength of Shastra that most likely it is my karma fructifying itself. But because that's what Shastra says, you know, when I'm enjoying, I'm enjoying the fruits of pious karma. If I'm suffering, I'm getting the fruits of impious karma. So by evidence of Shastra, we can understand it's my karma. But that doesn't help us become Krishna conscious. That's the point. So we rather conceive of it as Krishna's arrangement. And that helps us to think of Krishna. Okay, so what am I supposed to do then? Or that I can prove to Krishna that I'm serious about whatever. Like that. There's only so many ways you can conceive of obstacles. So the body will make this particular choice. Okay, are there any other? Yeah. There's no. The question is there a reason I mentioned anarchana vritti as a reason for Krishna? Yes, actually it's usually the result of karma to even higher stages of devotional service. The reason is that the pure devotional service has six characteristics, the first being it removes suffering, kleshagni, and shubhada being the second, of the two. It bestows auspiciousness to the practitioner. These two qualities manifest in the stage of sadhana, kleshagni and shubhada, manifest in the stage of sadhana. And that too, they manifest at the stage of nishta. So, therefore, before the stage of nishta, that means anarjanavritti or lower, in terms of how a devotee will conceive of things, things will be more of a mental adjustment, which it could be situated in truth, but as far as his subjective realization, it's more like a mental adjustment. Therefore, sometimes he's able to do it, sometimes he's not able to do it. That's what anarchist means. So anarchist means just hills and valleys. We hear this type of experience. So sometimes he's able to adjust his mind, okay, it's Krishna's mercy, and sometimes he's not able to do it. That's because he hasn't attained nishta. At the stage of nishta, though, his mind will be completely fixed on Krishna. Sometimes it wavers off to the mature energy, but he's able to bring it back immediately and fix it on the lotus feet of Krishna. So then, but it is mentioned that, I forget where it's mentioned, to be honest with you. I think it's in that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but I know where I read it. I don't want to say anything else, but I know where I read it, that until one attains a stage of asakti, the influence of karma may still be operative. You can read this actually in Madhurya Kandambini. We need to make a chart of how the influence of karma dissipates with greater and greater attainments of devotional service. It's elaborately described in Madhurya Kandambini. I think after we finish Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu for our little Brahmachari thing, we can maybe look through the Madhurya Kandambini because it deals with the nine stages of devotional service in a very scientific way. So that's why I mentioned that way. In terms of how a devotee is able to fix his mind, before the stage of nishcha, it really is kind of like a mental adjustment. You know, and sometimes he's able to do it, and sometimes he's not able to do it. Hills and valleys. At the stage of nishcha, he'll be fixed in his conception that it's Krishna's kindness upon me. But it doesn't change. It doesn't all change right away. It's like saying by chanting Hari Nam, you'll be freed from all material contamination. That's true, but it doesn't happen instantly. It happens with greater and greater degrees. You got to continue to take the medicine. So when the spiritual master takes all the karma, it's not like it happens right away. It happens as you follow his instructions and make progress in spiritual life. Your karma is dissipating. So we should not conceive of it romantically and with the idea that everything is going to just dissipate. It's like a total blank slate, and now everything, it happens as you surrender to Krishna. This point is made by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in an essay called Initiation to Spiritual Life. It's his opening statement, in fact, that the experience of the disciple depends on his degree of surrender to the spiritual master. And therefore, the experience is not the same for everyone. He makes that point. Otherwise, if it were the same for everyone, then it would be like a blank slate program from everyone. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that the experience is not the same for everyone. It depends on their own surrender to the spiritual master and subsequent progress in spiritual life. So when it says that karma is dissipated, we shouldn't conceive of it in a romantic way. It is dissipated as you continue to take the medicine and move forward and on the road to recovery. Yeah, that's true. Like I said, this is true. This will be the mental adjustment made by a sadhaka who's yet to attain higher stage of devotional service. We should know that Krishna is not directly involved in the life of any sadhaka until he comes to the platform of full surrender at the stage of Ruchi. That's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his very first song of Sharanagati, that Krishna hears the prayers of one who's completely surrendered. Surrender begins, of course, at the stage of Bhajan Kriya, but it's considered completed at the stage of Ruchi. Not completed in the sense that now, after Ruchi, you don't surrender, but it means that surrender is fully erected. The stage of surrender in which Krishna can begin to dance is fully erected at the stage of Rushi. And then by further progress in devotional service, you will invite the actors onto the stage of your surrender heart at the stage of Bhava and Prema. So full surrender happens at the stage of Rushi, at which time one has a direct relation, or Krishna, Nandana, Rajendra Nandan Krishna directly hears your prayers. But that's discouraged us because Lord Chaitanya is more merciful than Krishna. He hears the prayers of everyone. Therefore, his influence is certainly there acting. And that is certainly true. So we do have these experiences in the beginning of our devotional service where it's obviously some direct intervention of the Supreme Lord, at least apparently so. And we have no reason to doubt that as well. But then sometimes it happens, not sometimes, most of the time, it happens that that's an experience in the beginning of devotional service, like Krishna's giving you a little peekaboo in order to keep you inspired. But then later on, it's like a whole host of anarchists start coming up, all sorts of attachments that I thought I got over start coming up. And then one's like, what happened? Did Krishna abandon me? It's like, well, no, he didn't abandon you. He gave you a little peekaboo so you can get a little inspired. And then after that, he closed the curtain and said, okay, now how much do you really want that? You know, it's just like, I don't know, what's a good example? It's like someone, you want a particular like diamond, someone shows you that the diamond's just behind the curtain, and you start like salivating, like, wow, it's so close, and then he closes the door, it's like, but if you want this, you gotta do this. So it is certainly the case that in the beginning, you might get a little bit of, a swoosh, a mercy, you know, in the beginning to nourish a certain enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. And then after that, you may experience a flood of anarchists that come up. And then you got the work. You got to do the work. So my point is that we shouldn't romanticize about what it means. You know, otherwise we have a romantic idea, you know, based on some nice experience in the beginning. That's wonderful. Roll with it, you know, while the good times are coming, let them come. But then when the bad times come up also, when you have to really deal with your lack of internal development, when it becomes quite apparent to you that I can't stop buying devotees, I can't, you know, I'm not feeling happiness for my devotional activities. And when those things start coming up, one should not think, well, maybe Krishna just left me. Well, maybe Krishna just gave you a peekaboo in the beginning. Now you got to really work hard to see if that's what you really want. He wants to see if that's what you really want as well. So that's why I'm speaking of it in those terms. In an ideal world, we don't live in an ideal world. In an ideal world, we have those nice experiences in the beginning, and they keep on going all the way until we get to the goal of life. That's in the ideal world. In the real world, the general experience is something nice in the beginning, then a long life of struggle. And then, perhaps for a rare few, they take the struggle until it pays dividends in the form of pure Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we hear so many stories of devotees who can account for such experiences and later on leaving. And then we get people, well, why did they go? Because you got to see, what is it that we're really wrong? Krishna consciousness is the long haul. It's not, you know, a one-time experience. God intervened and, okay, great, fantastic. Now what are you going to do with that? So like that. I speak in a less romantic way, dry philosophy and so on. But I think it's realistic enough so we don't be too much in illusion about what the process is going to be. It is a road of struggle. Spiritual life is a life for people who are very courageous because you have to deal with your inner life in ways that you've probably never dealt with it before. In the material world, it's easy to neglect our inner life. We just drown ourselves in intoxication, illicit sex, you know, and frivolity. And that way we never have to deal with our inner life. And then when given the opportunity to do so, many people shy away from it because you might not be happy with what you see. So the enter into spiritual life proper takes a great courageous person. Dealing with a lot of things we don't want to have to deal with, aspects of ourselves that are very frightening, oftentimes. And so, we should be realistic about what it's going to be. It seems a little negative, but it's ultimately positive because it's showing a life of a courageous person, a life of courage. Did you send your fruit? Did you hear that? He said, Srila Prabhupada told his followers that you're going back to Godhead in a rowboat, and I'm going back to Godhead in a speedboat. A rowboat with holes in it. I'm praying that I won't become attracted as well. Yeah, there's two energies of God that Maya always uses, and she doesn't have any reason to use anything else because they generally always work, and that's wealth and the attraction to the object of sex desire, whichever it may be. These two things always work. You know, devotee may be going full speed ahead. You know, he may caught a rowboat from Srila Prabhupada, and he's going full speed ahead, and with that comes other side benefits. This is called Bhakti Tarangini in the language of Madhurya Kandamini, riding the waves of Bhakti. You know, because by doing Bhakti, you start getting things like worship, name, fame, opulence. These things come by progress in devotional service. These are obviously side benefits, but they do come up. And then one who is not fixed on the goal of life, he tries to ride those waves of Bhakti. This is going good. And then he falls. And it always works. These two things are always quite effective. Send some money, send some the object of sex desire. So one definitely has to be careful. We have to pray that Srila Prabhupada. If we're not burning with the fire of prema, and therefore nothing can satisfy us externally, then we're always in danger. Yeah, when he's transcended the most, he's reached a goal. And until then, he can try his level best to comprehend the modes of nature and try to remain aloof from its influence. But, yeah, so they're trapped. But what about the sadhakas like ourselves? In a few verses earlier to this, not Lakshmi's prayers, but whoever was praying before this, I think Prahlad Maharaj, he offered the prayer saying that even for liberated persons, they sometimes get caught by the modes of material nature because the modes are very powerful. Without this point comes up again, Bhavapada Parayana, Krishna's language in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamayi, Mamamaya Dharataya, Mameva Ye Prapadyante, the same, Bhavapada Parayana. Unless you're surrendered wholesale to Krishna, then Maya is very strong and Her influence is great in this material world. Even if you come to a platform of Jivan Mukta, being actually liberated, and can understand what is actually happening, her influence can still act. So until you're out of the material world, we're kind of in the danger zone. Or if you got prema, you're pretty much okay. Prema means, you know, you're burnt. Literally, this is a description in Virabhavasramrita, you're burning with the fire of prema. So the same example, when you're burning with the fire of hunger, then nothing will satisfy you when you're really hungry. Even if someone glorifies you when you're starving, that glorification doesn't... It might be attractive for like 5 seconds, you know, but then your hunger pains keep you focused. Your hunger pains keep you focused on eating. So similarly, when someone's burning with the fire of love of God, that fire keeps them focused on Krishna, who's the only thing that can satisfy that fire or remove the burning sensation in the heart. So unless we got that going on, then... You know, we're in the danger zone, certainly, and expect troubles along the way. So it's 8:30. I thank you all for tolerating me this morning. Sorry, I didn't speak as succinctly as I normally do. I usually finish by 8 o'clock. I got a little late today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.